Hey, friends, I just wanted to talk to you for a few seconds. We're going to get into the content soon. But if you're new to the show, we just want to invite you to subscribe. We're trying to see 2025 be a year of growth and expansion. We just need people like you to subscribe to our channel and to share about the episodes that you just are totally in love with on social media. And then lastly, if you can leave us a review today, we'd greatly appreciate it. The algorithms will appreciate it. And so thank you so much for joining us on the Marriage After God podcast. And I just pray that you enjoy this content. Hey, everyone. This is Aaron Smith with Marriage After God podcast. In today's episode, I get the privilege of talking with Arlene Pelican. She's the author of 10 books. Her most recent book is called Making Marriage Easy. Who doesn't want to make their marriage easier? Especially with the world these days, making such a negative connotation towards marriage about how hard it is, about it, how it's taking a step back, how it's a negative thing. Arlene makes a different approach, and she says that we can make marriage easy again. And she has four decisions that we get to talk, that we talk about in this conversation that will help your marriage be easier. And so Arlene's been married for 25 years. She's got three kids. She's a wonderful person. She loves Jesus, and her heart is to encourage marriages to see their marriage as something that could be easy, something that can be enjoyable, more fun. And so I just pray that you would enjoy this conversation that I have with Arlene Pelican. Hey, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jennifer.
And we're the hosts of the Marriage After God podcast. Our desire is to help you cultivate a marriage that chases boldly after God's will for your life together.
We want to invite you to subscribe to our show wherever you watch or listen.
We are so glad you're here, and we pray that our discussion truly blesses you and your marriage.
Welcome to the Marriage After God podcast.
Hey, everyone. This is Aaron Smith with Marriage After God podcast, and I'm sitting here with Arlene Pelican, and we're about to have an awesome conversation. Welcome to the show, Arlene.
So great to be with you, and hello to Jennifer.
Thank you. Yeah, she's doing awesome. Arlene, we were just talking a second ago about our new baby, Emryn. I just realized I don't know if I've even mentioned her on our podcast since we've had her, and so I just want to let everyone know, yeah, we had our sixth little baby, but she's a girl. And her name's Emryn, and she's about 12 weeks at the time of this recording. And gosh, she's getting chunky and awesome, and all the kids are fighting over her. It's amazing.
See, it's a good thing that we were talking about her, because this is what your listeners need to know.
I know. I just realized. I was like, man, I don't think I've told anyone.
It's because you're walking in this fog of like, let me just get what I need to get done, and then let me go to sleep. Yeah. Let me help my wife.
Well, and also when Jennifer's with me on the show, she remembers all these things. She's like, let's talk about this. I'm like, oh, yeah, we need to mention that. And it's me, so.
I love this. We need to mention this sixth child. I love this.
Yeah. So Arlene, why don't we start with who you are, a little bit of your background, how many kids you have, and introduce you to our audience.
Yeah, my name is Arlene Pelican. My husband James and I have been married for 25 years, and I was the high school girl who was just like, oh Jesus, please bring a husband, please bring a husband. You know, I just wanted that so much, and it took a while, but it was totally worth the wait. And then it also took a while for us to have kids. We wanted to have children, had a little bit of trouble having children, didn't think that would happen. So we found out that I had a fibroid in my uterus, needed to have surgery. So after that was done, then we had Ethan. So it was very exciting for us. So we have three children. One boy and two girls. Two are in college now, and we just have one at home. She's a sophomore. Our baby is Lucy. So it is a new phase of life. Lucy very much misses Ethan and Noelle, her siblings, as do we. But we're also having this new normal of like, well, in my opinion, it's like, well, at least we have one child left here still, which is fun for both of us. But we have always thought and understood these kids are going to grow up and leave our house. So we need to be sure that we know each other, like each other, enjoy each other, and will not freak out when they all leave. So we've kind of had learned that lesson from other people who have told us, like, make sure you tend to your marriage while your kids are growing up so that there is a strong foundation. Mm-hmm. And we were fortunate enough when our kids were really little, we had neighbors who were very like God honoring, and they had just these lovely two girls. And so we would just ask them, like, what did you do to make your girls so amazing? And really a key principle they taught us was that the child enters your home, but they are not the center of your home, and you don't orbit around them. So that's kind of been what we have tried to do, and very much the backbone, I guess, behind making marriage easier is this whole idea of why this is a priority relationship. And that enhances, obviously, your parenting. It enhances the family life. It doesn't detract from it. So I've been fortunate enough to write books and speak and do those kinds of things. My podcast is called The Happy Home, and I have several books out, including Screen Kids. I like to talk about technology as well.
Yeah, you've been doing this for a long time. I feel like we've known about you almost as long as we've been doing this. When did you start writing? Because you have a lot. I was just on Amazon. I couldn't count how many books you have.
But my first book came out in 2010, and then Making Marriage Easier will be number 10. So I like this. They're all like nice 10s, and then maybe we'll call it quits. I'm not sure in terms of writing, but it's book number 10.
I think you hit on our first little tidbit of knowledge for today was that you guys reached out and you sought after counsel from someone who's been in the business of marriage and family longer, parenting. You saw children that you're like, wow, they turned out really great. What did you do? And that's something so important for each one of us to consider as we're doing this, that we, for since the beginning of time, people didn't, you know, they weren't married and raised their kids, you know, on an island. They did it in communities and they did it with other people that were like-minded. And I think we forget about that. We forget that we can ask someone that's done it before, gone before us, and say, hey, what did you do? It doesn't mean that we have to do it exactly the way they did it, but drawing on our elders is so important. It's something that I think we've lost this generation.
My mentors, Pam and Bill Farrell, are in the book, Making Marriage Easier, and neither of them came from homes where there was a healthy marriage modeled. So when they were in their 20s and had just gotten married, what they would do is they'd look for happy people in church, like people that were still holding hands, people that looked like generally happy to be together. And they would literally sit next to them. And then they'd introduce themselves. You know, here there are these young, starving 20-year-olds to this, you know, older, empty nest kind of couple. And they'd say, can we go to lunch? And then invariably the people would take them out for lunch, right? But they did this. This was their practice, like over and over and over. They were like actively looking for people. And I think that's so good. And really don't be embarrassed to ask, because most people would feel very complimented. Like, what, you want to have coffee with me? Because you think I have something to tell you? Like, most people will really like that. They like, don't be afraid to ask.
And unfortunately, I feel like our generation, many of us didn't have healthy families. Yeah. Not, I mean, my parents are still together. They loved me. They did their best. They're still together. My wife's parents divorced, but her current marriage, they've been together essentially her whole life.
Yeah.
But we've seen lots of broken stories, which is essentially the story of humanity, right?
Right.
But it's also why Jennifer and I started Marriage After God. And I'm assuming it's why you started your ministries, because there's a need for us to recognize the power of what God instituted in marriage, why he created it in the first place, that it's the, you know, there's a purpose behind it being the first institution that he came up with. And the power of our kids being able to see that. Is that what did inspire you to go on this journey of strengthening marriages, talking about parenting? What was the catalyst for that for you?
You know, it was very simple, because it was, I enjoyed speaking and I enjoyed like encouragement. So those are the things I like. I like talking to people and I like encouraging them. So it's like, well, what can I encourage them about? You're right. So you start thinking, what should I talk about? And for me, like, my greatest joy has been my family. Like, I really enjoy being a wife. I really enjoy being a mom. And that is something that's not as common as it used to be, right?
Sadly,
before, probably in our grandparents' generation, the kinds of things I say, like, have dinner with your family, you know, like these very simple things, our grandparents would be like, yeah, that's what kind of what we do. So it really is just to help people realize, wait, there are just some simple things you can do to have good relationships, because at the end of our life, none of us are going to say, right, like, oh, wow, look, my social media feed is so robust, or I made a ton of money and I have so much stuff. Like, none of us are going to say that. We're going to think, like, who was here to witness my life? Like, who is still here with me? Like, so I just really, like, to me, those are areas where I really enjoy and I want other people to also. So that really was the way I thought, okay, let's write about marriage. Let's write about parenting.
Almost like they're the most important things in this life.
Yeah.
Like outside of our salvation, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, it's the foundation of our society that it's literally being attacked and torn down and by piece by piece. You mentioned something about just, you know, on our deathbed or when we stand before the Lord, we're not going to look back and be like, look at my social media, look at how much money I made. It's the most real reality that exists is recognizing that it's only people that matter.
Yeah,
it's only our relationships and how we walk with people. It's why I believe it's like the majority of the Bible focuses on our relationship with one another. Mm-hmm. And then it starts with our relationship with God, of course.
Yeah,
and then His desire is how we deal interpersonally. Between each other, not defrauding, not cheating, not lying. Jesus says the greatest commandment is loving the Lord God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and loving your neighbor as yourself. And He says on these two hang all the law and the prophets. And anyone who loves their neighbor fulfills the law. So when you love your spouse well, when you love your children, and your goal is to walk with them, you are doing the greatest thing you ever could do.
I think of that and you think, okay, if you only see your neighbor once in a while, maybe you just have to do that once a month, like be really nice. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you're super neighborly and every other day you talk for 5 minutes. Okay, great. Yeah. But think of it, your spouse, you are with them a lot. So if you can love that neighbor, right, that's like super fulfilling the law. So it is, it's like this beautiful place to learn how to love is in the marriage. I interviewed Dr. David Jeremiah. I put him in the book. And he and his wife, Donna, have been married more than 60 years. And he talks about how every memory he has her in it, you know? So he'll think like, oh, it's this song. And he'll look at her or look, it's that place we've been to. And he'll look at her and he's like, there's no one else on the planet who knows all these things, who has all these common experiences with me except her. And he really talks about how you really do become one flesh. And so this really special thing called marriage is, I mean, what a gift that you get to have this person who knows you so well and who's done all these things.
Yeah, I'm beginning to feel the same way. Not beginning, I'm beginning to realize I've always felt the same way. I could go and spend time with friends and go do something. Yeah. And it's fun for a short moment. But I'm always wanting my wife there. I'm like, man, I wish Jennifer would have experienced this. And so I realize all the things I want to do, I want her to be a part of it. And everything that she's doing, I want to be a part of it. And it's a good thing to recognize.
Yes.
So you're on your 10th book, okay, Making Marriage Easier, which I love the title because there's a lot of sentiment nowadays that marriage is hard, marriage is unnecessary, marriage is tedious, marriage is a taking a step back. This is you even mentioned this in your book. You talk about this worldly negative sentiment towards marriage. And then there's also an equally, you know, ugly negative sentiment towards children. But what makes Making Marriage Easier, your 10th book now, stand out among your other works?
It is my funniest book, because it's all these marriage stories that are utterly ridiculous. So it is super easy to read, and it is for sure my funniest book. And I hope in the laughing of it that there's a lot of weight too, right? Mm-hmm. Because it is, I think through laughter, it helps us to see things. When we're very serious or very sad or very guarded, it's hard to have that illumination. But when we've kind of laughed and been able to laugh at ourselves, I think that's a huge thing of making marriage easier is if you can take whatever problem you're having and just kind of realize there's a funny side to that. Or when you're in the heat of the moment, realize in 2 years, this will be really funny. Like when you have that.
It's not funny right now.
It's not funny right now, but in 2 years, it's going to be funny. So I think that makes it a different book. It's also, I really, really hope that it is the kind of book that will make different rhythms in the home, that it's like, oh, wow, my attitude has shifted. Like the book has four main decisions that you'll make. And this isn't, you know, it's not feeling based, it's decision based. Like I'm going to make these decisions that when you had the marriage vow, that vow wasn't an acknowledgement of how you felt right then. Because of course, right then you were like, oh, my world revolves around you. Mm-hmm. I rise and fall at the sound of your name. You know what I mean? Like you're there. But the vow is a future commitment that regardless of what happens, I will still love you. So I hope that people will pick this up and realize, oh, I'm thinking about this wrong. I'm thinking of this, like, what do you do for me? I'm thinking of this transactionally, because that's how our relationships are now. Like, transactionally, if they help you, great. If they're difficult to be with, just cut them out of your life. You know, so that's kind of what we're used to. So instead to realize, wait a minute, I have some decisions here to make. And once I've made those decisions, then it's like, wow, it makes everything easier. Instead of battling things, you've accepted them, you know. So I think things like that, I'm hoping that it'll have those clear points that will resonate with the reader.
So as I was skimming through your book, there are quite a bit of stories in it. And you're talking about funny stories. I'm thinking of one, but I'm not going to say what it is.
Okay.
What's one funny story that you want to share from this book that you think everyone will think is funny?
There are so many. Okay, so two come to mind. I'm going to go with my wedding registry. So this is the idea that you come into the marriage with different expectations. And one of you thinks, you think you're right. Like, you think the other person, and this could be big things about marriage, or this could just be like, where are we supposed to eat dinner tonight? Like, you think you are right. And it really helps to realize, wait a minute, the other person, they think they are equally right. So our wedding registry, my husband, James, was living in Dallas. I was living in Virginia Beach. We were separated because of work. So I told him, I'll do one department store, you do the other. Why don't you go to Target, get the little scanner gun, and you just go crazy, get all the things you want in our house. Great. I go to Target, I print out the registry, and I'm just like, wait, there's a tent and like a little stove and little camping equipment. Okay, I'm not a camper. Like, my camping is like, oh, we looked at the lake and we stayed at the lodge. You know, that is my camping. My husband is total like backpack, stars, the whole thing. So I'm like, well, that's annoying. There's like camping equipment on this thing. That's ridiculous. I keep reading KY Jelly. I'm like, wait a minute. You've got, I don't even know if I can say that on your podcast. I'm just not sure. It was on my wedding registry. Advil, Tylenol, Tums, hornet's nest, wasp like killers. I was like, what? I'm like sweating. I'm like, what? Like, I'm just freaking out. So we have no cell phones then, of course. So I go home and I think to myself, it is a practical joke. He is sending his groomsmen to Target and this is going to be so funny and they're all going to buy it and they're going to think it's so funny. Oh, I get it. So I call him and I'm like, oh, sweetie. I also want to note that when you're dating, like, we never called each other by our names, right? It was always like, sweetie, honey,
shmoopy, the pet names.
Like always. So one way you can make your marriage easier is just go back to the hun or whatever it is you used to call it once in a while, like work that in. Sweetie, that's so funny what you did to the registry. You must be playing a practical joke. And there's total silence on the other end. And he's like, what? And I'm like, the stuff on the registry. And now he is literally offended. He goes, you told me to put the stuff I want on the registry. And that's the stuff we need. I don't need like a glass candy dish. I don't need a candle. I don't need plates. We have plates. Like, that's what we need. So now I'm like dumbfounded. Like, wait a minute. I'm the bad guy because I don't want Tylenol on my list. So we were going through marital counseling and I was like, okay, they say that men like word pictures. Men like word pictures. So I'm like, okay. Imagine you're in line. You're going to see the queen. You have a beautifully wrapped present and you hand it to the queen and she opens it and it's Windex. I'm like, sweetheart, people don't do that. It's not appropriate. So it barely got through, but we finally decided we would take all the things that had to do with medicine and other things. We took those things off the list. We kept the camping equipment and that's it. But that like little glimpse is so us. Like, and he's thinking, what's, and I'm sure every man listening to this is like, yes. Why don't they buy us things we actually need and can use, right?
So you're with, right? Totally relate to this.
Right? So this is marriage. And so making marriage easier is realizing, you know what? We have two different viewpoints. Why fight it? Why fight it? And in fact, see it from the other, like, I get that. Like, to be able to say to him, you know what? Now that we've been married 25 years, maybe the Tylenol wouldn't have been so bad. We could have used it. Somebody would have really gotten a kick out of buying it for us. I don't know. Like, you do. Yeah. So basically cross the street and see it from the other person's angle and realize you have your way of seeing it, but they also have their way of seeing it. Both are good and fine and equal. Mm-hmm. and really seek to try to understand the other person and have a little fun in doing so.
Speaking of wedding registries, when Jennifer and I were working on ours, and I was new to all this whole idea of getting ready to be married, of course. And I'm like, okay, well, why don't we, like, we were planning on going to be missionaries for a little bit right after we got married. And I'm thinking, like, I don't want a bunch of stuff that we're going to have to store somewhere. I don't want, like, I don't know where we're going to be living yet. I don't know what we're going to be having yet. I was like, why can't we just ask for money? She's like, that's not appropriate. Right. She's like, you can't just ask for money on the registry. I'm like, but that's all what we need. Money. We literally need money to go to Africa. We need money for a car. We need money for, like, I don't know, all these plane tickets.
Goodness. It's so true.
It's I'm thinking very practically.
Yes. And then
she's
got
like,
a blender.
You can't do that.
Yeah, you got a blender. And then you're like, what do we do with a blender? Right.
Yeah, but you know what's funny now? Those are all the things I want. I'm like, we need a blender.
Totally.
We need some foot warmers. I would love a comforter, a really nice, heavy comforter for our bed.
Maybe you could have like some kind of anniversary where people give you gifts again.
That's a great idea. We should start up a trend. It's like, hey, this is the registry for our 20th anniversary.
That's right.
You're like, what? Yep. There's a few things we need.
People are crazy enough that they would honor that you had a crazy idea, and who knows, you might get that comforter.
They would do it. Like, we got a few things, big ticket items. We're looking
for. I feel
like
your listeners might chip in for this because they're like, yeah, we weren't in for the wedding. We'll help you.
This is actually, I think we should run with this because there's some like big things like mattresses. They're the kind of thing that we never want to have to buy again because they're so expensive.
Totally.
But man, I'm like, every night you're like, I don't like my mattress.
Yeah.
We need a new mattress.
That's a big thing.
It's a big thing. Oh, man. So you talked about four core decisions. And I love that you say decisions because this isn't an emotional thing, but often in life, men are definitely not as emotional as women are, but we still tend to gauge and respond and react emotionally. We make decisions that are not necessarily logical or rational, even though we might think we are. But the fact that it's a decision is exactly how God calls us to operate as believers. We're not just operating in the flesh, meaning like what I feel right now, how my body is responding and reacting, how my brain's chemicals are triggering. He wants us to think through things and have that's the idea of sober-mindedness. So what are these four decisions that we can make that will make it easier to have an easier marriage?
Yes. Decision one is play by the rules. And what that means is there are things that you just agree beforehand, like these are things we do and these are things we don't do, you know, and there's going to be different rules that you do. And this is not to be legalistic. So I talk about the Pharisees in the book. We're not talking about like 500 plus laws. We're talking about principles like we eat every day together. That's as simple as I'm talking about. It's not like you signed a contract like I will not put food in my mouth unless you're sitting next to me. It's just that's the general rule that if we're both in town together and there's not a special kids event that we have to be at, we will eat together every day. And it's just, you just kind of go for it. So play by the rules, that there are certain rules that your family, your coupleness live by, and it's not based on feelings. You go for them. So that's decision one. Decision two is give thanks every day. And this is so scriptural that throughout scripture, we are told, give thanks. Because what does it ultimately do? It says, God, we recognize that you've given this to us. And today we want to say thank you. You know, the children of Israel, their big thing wasn't
grumbling.
Adultery. It wasn't the, you know, whatever, idolatry, even like bowing before an idol. It was, they grumbled and they said, this way of doing things is not good enough for us. I mean, you've given us a fire by night. You lead us by a cloud by day. Like they were experiencing the miraculous every day, magic food, manna, magic quail. But it was like, no, we're sick of this kind of magic. We would like to see some different kind of magic. And doesn't that sound like married people that we're like, yeah, we got the same marriage, got the same things. We're sick of that. Can't you do something new? And so we've really got to, if we can make that decision, like, wait, I'm going to be thankful. I am going to be thankful for my husband. I'm going to be thankful for that coffee cup that's left there that I have to pick up every day. I'm going to be thankful that I have to run across town to have lunch with you because I have the ability, you know, et cetera. So give thanks. Such a huge, that shifts everything. The third decision is to serve one another, serve one another. Again, biblically, serve one another. And it is that idea. If you go through your marriage, like, what have you done for me? Like, if you go through your day today, like, what has Jennifer done for me today? Mm-hmm. By the end of the day, you're like, well, not much. You right? And then you're kind of mad. But if you think instead, like, well, what can I do for Jennifer today? Then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I could bring her a glass of water right now. Or I could tell her she looks pretty. And that's like super simple. And then at the end of the day, you feel good about yourself. You're like, I served my wife today. I mean, how different. So that whole, just that shift of, I'm not going to ask, like, what have you done for me lately? Because that's a losing question. Instead, I'm going to say, what can I do for you today? Mm-hmm. Because I have control over that. And that actually makes me feel really good because I've done something kind for my spouse. And even if you're listening and you're like, wait a minute, I do that all the time. Like, I'm always doing something for my spouse and they never do something for me. So now you're telling me to even be more of a doormat or more of a servant, right? This may be what you're thinking. But you know what? Your reward is coming. Like, when we are in heaven, we're not going to be judged like, did you get in? No, your salvation is because of the grace of Jesus Christ. But your works will be judged. Like, hey, what'd you do down there when you were there? And more importantly, like, how'd you treat the people? I think that's gonna be part of it. Like, what'd you do eternally? And so even if you feel like your spouse is not responsive to your service now, you or on this particular day, let's say you try to do it and they didn't notice. And so you're like, oh, that didn't work. Mm-hmm. God notices. And over time, your spouse is going to notice too. So that third decision, serve your spouse. And then the fourth decision is take fun seriously. So a lot of times we think, oh, that fun, we don't have time for that, right? But you actually have to have a little fun or else the whole thing is a big drag. So fun got you into the relationship, right? That's, you liked your spouse because they were fun. Yeah. So try to realize, wait a minute, this is a priority. Like, we need to take a vacation. We need to have fun. We need to go out to dinner once in a while. We need to be silly and goofy like we used to be. Like, whatever your goofy was before you had kids and a mortgage and a job and so serious, like, once in a while, loop back to that. I'm not saying every day has to be like a comedian thing. No, but you just have to like prioritize it. Like, if you're actually having fun together, realize this is not frivolous. Like, you're actually doing something really good to make your marriage easier.
We're looking for people who have been blessed by this free podcast and our free daily marriage prayer emails and who want to help be a blessing to others. Creating and hosting this podcast and sending out our daily emails do incur a financial cost. And we want to invite you to join our faithful patron team to help financially support these resources so that they can remain free for all who need them. Please join our patron team today and become one of the faithful financial supporters who desires to help bless thousands of marriages around the world. Your support will help us pay for the creation, hosting, and promotion of our podcast and daily emails. Thank you, and we hope to see you become a Marriage After God patron. I love that. I want to make a note on serving each other. It's an amazing thing in our flesh how we're so often so favorable in how we view our serving. Yeah. So like if I serve, I'm like, man, I did so much, right? I did so much today. I served you so well. I brought you breakfast. Right. I complimented you. But when it comes to how we evaluate our spouse and their serving of us, it's very unfavorable. You didn't do enough.
Right.
And we're often, I think that's where the rule before that or the decision before that about Thanksgiving changes that. Because if you're thankful for what someone does for you, no matter how little it is, it becomes a lot. You're like, well, I'm so thankful that you did that for me, that you said that to me, that you reminded me of that, that you were there for me in that moment. It turns that unfavorable perspective of others on its head.
Yeah.
And then the humility involved in doing that turns yourself like, oh, I didn't do enough. I want to do more. 'Cause going back to that, how our flesh desires, it's going to always skew in our direction.
Totally.
And we need to totally. Do. And going back to your last decision, say it again. What was the last decision that you've got to make?
Take fun seriously.
Taking fun seriously.
Yes.
That's not what I wanted to talk about, actually.
There was something you said.
you said something about, when we're in heaven, that God keeps good. He keeps good accounting, right?
Yeah.
While we're here with our spouse and with others, it's not that he's just looking at our works. It's what are we doing with our salvation?
Yeah.
What are we doing with the gift of grace that God's given us? And that's what should be pouring out of us. The reason I want to serve my wife or my children or my neighbor or anyone is because of what Christ did for me.
Like out of obedience to Christ.
Out of obedience to Christ.
I want to follow you. I want to become more like you. And marriage really is, if we can view our marriage as like, wow, that's the main stage where God's going to make us more like him, like make us more humble, make us more kind, make us, take that 1 Corinthians 13 and instead of love, put your name in that is, am I less boastful? Am I less envious? And all those things, they get worked out in a marriage in a big way.
Yeah. And every day, often getting worked out every single day. Out of those four decisions, what would you believe is the hardest one that you had to embrace or even continue have to embrace? Because I would imagine this is not a one and done thing. This is a lifetime of practice.
Yeah. I think it is the serve your spouse. I think we've done pretty well over the years. The fun piece, maybe sometimes, because for instance, my husband loves to ski. So that to him is so fun. So I took the class and I did okay. And for one day, I enjoyed skiing on the bunny slopes. It was me and all the kids, right? All learning. But by the second day, basically, I was sent on an intermediate slope that I just thought would about kill me. It's like this was the wrong lift and I should not have been on it. And from that day moving forward, I have really not liked skiing. So I've tried. We've done the things. And after many years, we have just realized this is not my jam. You and the kids go do your black diamonds. I will be in the most beautiful, picturesque place, sitting, reading a book, and this is just great for everyone. So I think that actually has been a hard one for me, take fun seriously, because that's true for a lot of couples, that the fun thing that you do, your spouse doesn't do it with you. Like, they don't like it. So I think if you would have asked me this a year or two ago, I would have said the take fun seriously. But we've kind of made peace with the skiing thing. And then we are trying to find more things we do together for fun. Right now it's ballroom dancing, which is pretty funny. So we are taking lessons and we both like it and we both do it. And we figure, you know what? As we get older, we see a lot of 70-year-olds, 80-year-olds out there dancing. So it's something we can keep doing. So that's like been really a sweet thing for us. So that area is doing a little bit better. So I would say the serving, because it is when I'm doing this not because I want to do it, but I'm doing this because I know it would bless you. So I'll go ahead and do it. That's, that's hard for all of us.
Yeah. The having fun, it's kind of funny because I feel like many people think I'm a fun person, but I think that's a hard one for me. Serving is always hard, of course. That's something that's constantly being challenged with me. But I noticed the having fun, taking it seriously, also with my children, the struggle with, they come and like, it's so natural for them and they'll want to be goofy with me, or they try and tickle me out of nowhere or scare me or jump on me. And then I snap, I'm like, what are you doing? Like, and they look at me with these wide eyes, like they were just trying to play them. And I catch myself. I'm like, why am I being a grouch right now? Like, why? What? They're just trying to have fun with me.
They're like the grouchy Papa Bear. I love this. They're expecting you to tickle back. And instead you're like, what are you doing?
Yeah. And I almost immediately get convicted. And God's like, they're going to grow up and they're going to stop wanting to play with you. It was like an animation a long time ago about, a dad on his phone and, are busy doing something. The kid's like, play with me, play with me. He's like, not right now. And then they get older. And then all of a sudden the dad's like, hey, you want to go do something? And the son's like, not right now. And I was like, and that cartoon comes to my mind.
Totally.
When my daughter runs up and she's like, dance with me, dance with me. I'm like, I can't right now. And then I'm like, okay.
Yes.
All right.
It's so true. Yes.
Yeah. The having fun. That's a big deal.
Yeah. And you know what's funny? So people, you would think like, oh, well, that's not fun because it didn't happen naturally. But you actually have to work at it. Like, that's okay to be like, wait a minute, I need to switch and I need to do this and I just need to tickle you even though I don't, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, you're just telling yourself like, no, I want to participate, because just like you're saying, I don't want to miss this. And then if you always reject that bid for fun, then people will stop asking you to have fun, right? And then they're having fun without you, and you don't want that either. So I think it is important to reciprocate that and say, yes, I will have fun.
And just as much important with my wife, making sure that I'm not pushing her away when she's trying to be silly with me or lighthearted. that's another problem is like, we try and be lighthearted at some points, but then we get offended. Like, why did you say that? I'm like, I was playing, I swear. Right.
Needs being a lot careful. Of explanations, a lot of explanations along the way. That was one of the things that I would put in the book of, you know, don't make the big things, wait, I'm sorry. Don't make the small things big and don't make the big things small, right? So when there is a small thing, just, I didn't mean it that way, and just let it go. But when there really is a big thing, but you think, I'm just going to ignore it because I don't feel like talking about it. That one you actually do have to talk about.
Yeah, in the book, you call that keeping dragons small, right?
Yes, yeah.
So why don't you talk about that for a second?
Yeah, that is not my comment. It was something I listened to with Dr. Jordan Peterson, and he was talking about this book. And in the book, there's a little dragon, and the little boy, and in this book, the dragon is real. And the boy's like, look, Mom, it's a dragon, and it's a little cat. And the mom's like, there's no such thing as dragons. And basically the dragon keeps growing and growing and growing until it uproots the whole foundation of the house. And she still does not admit there's a dragon. But once it's admitted, oh yeah, there's a dragon, then it shrinks down to the size of a cat. Mm. And it is this idea of, if we say like, we don't have a problem. Like, we don't have a money problem. We don't have a sex problem. We don't have a communication problem, you know, whatever. That problem grows and grows and grows. Mm. But once we say, you know what, our spending is out of control and we better get ourselves to a financial, like, you know, literacy thing. We better do something. Then all of a sudden it starts shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. So, you know, I quote the Mr. Rogers that whatever is mentionable is manageable. Like, we need to be able to mention things, because when we feel like we can't say or talk about it, that's how things grow. And use tact and wisdom. You know, don't talk about these things when you're hungry and the kids are running around. That's not the time to be like, hey, there's a dragon in the house, you know. Yep. But that's what a, like, hey, I need to talk to you about something. Let's set aside some time tomorrow at such and such a time to talk about it. And then they know, like, okay, this is serious, I better show up for this. And I'd suggest too, like, if it's something serious and kind of sad, like, that's not a date night comment, because we want to remember, keep the date night fun. That's just like a we need to meet comment.
It's a great analogy for sin, even.
Yes.
You know, when we keep things in the darkness, they can grow and fester and become more dark
and uproot everything around you, just because you won't say it.
And as the Bible tells us that, you know, whatever we drag into light becomes light.
Yeah.
And so dragging those things in light, making not just in sin, like, you know, I have this issue that needs to be confessed and repented of, which it can't be healed. It can't be changed or transformed when it's not confessed, when it's just existing in the background and hiding. But the same goes for like every aspect of our marriage.
Yeah.
Like, if there's just areas that we're not going to talk about, then that's probably an area that's fallen apart. That's probably an area that's got a big issue, and the dragon grows. We got to keep those dragons small, and we got to make sure that they're there. Do you want to share the story that you shared?
I would love to.
In the book?
I was actually thinking about it. So when James and I were dating, he was looking at me and he looked like he wanted to ask me a question, but he was all like nervous. I was like, gee, I hope this isn't the proposal. This is awful, right? It's bad. But he's like, there's been something I want to ask you, but I don't know how to do it. I'm like, you know, how you're dating and you're so in love. I'm like, oh, honey, you can tell me anything. And he said, well, you have these hairs on your upper lip. Have you ever thought of electrolysis? I was not expecting that. And I was like, electrolysis? Oh, gee, no, I really haven't thought of that. And I was just like, what in the world just happened? Yeah. It was super awkward. I looked at my watch and I was like, well, you know what? I got to go. I got to do some homework. We were in grad school and we were dating. I was like, I got to go. So I left. So I went to the bathroom and I looked in the mirror and these like the little peach fuzzy hairs, you know, little hairs that I've seen like all my life. All of a sudden I was like, oh my word, they're enormous. They're huge. And so I looked through the phone book because there's no phones. So I looked at the yellow pages, E, electrician, electrolysis. So I find this and it's like this laser company, right? And I don't even know, I'm not a girly girl. I never get my nails done. I don't go to the spa. So I barely know what this is. So I'm looking it up. And so I'm like, okay, I'll do it. So I book a session. It's like $50 or something for the first session and they zap, right, your hair and it falls out. Well, this happens and James cannot believe it because A, like we didn't fight about it. I was just like, oh my word, okay, I have to go. And then I actually did it. And then B, he was like, oh my word, she listened to me and she actually did it.
He must have thought you were done with him.
Yeah. She's never coming back.
She's gone.
She's out.
I should not have said anything.
She's out of there. And so he told me later, and this is what we'll tell audiences when I tell the story, people are like, oh, or they all hate him, you know, instantly. Like, how could your husband tell you that? That's so rude. And he'll say, I was really thinking of it and it was really an issue for me. Like I kept looking at them thinking like, you know, you could have those taken off. So he kept thinking about it. And he's like, if I cannot bring that up, like if I'm not allowed to bring that up, then if we get married, like how are we going to talk about like where are we going to live? What kind of job should I take? You know, these really huge decisions in your life that you're going to make. He's like, if I can't talk about hair, like, can I not talk about those things? So it was kind of a test. And so thankfully, after it all happened and I did come back and my lip looked better, then he was like, okay, this girl can work with me. And honestly, like, that's also how James is to me. Like, if he certainly has opinions and he's not afraid to say them, as we have kind of shared in our little podcast today. But if I say to him, honey, this was really offensive to me, like, he'll be like, oh, that's a good point. I will not do that next time. So he is very open. He always has been from the very start. So very opinionated, but very open. So like in our marriages, let's try to be like that. Like, oh, I didn't realize I'm doing that. Thanks for telling me. Because our natural reaction is, don't you mess with me, man, right? Like, don't mess with how I am. Leave me alone. But the whole point of marriage is like, hey, we're going to try to improve one another, but in a loving way.
Well, and it's a hard thing. It's like, how do you tell someone they should be able to ask these questions and then encourage someone to be like, hey, you should be able to hear these questions and hear these responses. But when you break down to its core, you know, the Bible calls us one flesh, and it even goes further than that. It says your wife's body is not her own, but yours, and your body is not your own, but hers.
Right.
And there's a reality that I think we need to recognize as husbands and wives that lends right to what you're talking about, this ability to look at the dragons, to recognize things in our life. It's not just, you know, hair. It's not just where we're going to live. It's everything.
Yeah.
If we think to ourselves, there's certain things that my spouse is not allowed to address in me. You are not allowed to bring this up because you're going to offend me. You're going to hurt me. If we're never allowed to offend each other, again, not for the sake of offense. Like I'm not doing because I'm mad at you and I'm going to,
we're not doing it to hurt you.
No, it needs to come from a place of, I love you. Here's something that's been on my heart. Here's something that I can't get past.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm wrong. Let's talk about it.
Yeah.
But here's what I'm looking at. Like you mentioned in your book and you mentioned a bunch of areas. Can we talk about sex?
Yeah.
Can we talk about porn? Can we talk about, you know, the names of our children or, you know, how we're going to deal with our in-laws? Can we talk about our weight? Can we talk about our eating habits? Can we talk about if there's things that are like this category, you're not allowed to touch, then we should ask ourselves why. Yeah. We should ask ourselves, why is that something that I'm protecting from my spouse who's supposed to be one with me? And they're not allowed to have access to that. Why am I doing that? And It's a hard thing. It's a hard thing for us to do because it requires us to be humble and to hear things that we probably don't want to hear.
Yes. Yeah.
But would that, you say that
the humility thing is so huge? And that humility thing is a good thing. And that if you have humbled yourself and brought yourself low, then whatever is said, you're kind of ready to receive it because you're real low, right? You're not from this real proud position of like, don't touch this, you know? So it's good for us because we are to walk humbly with God, right? Micah 6:8, like this is how we do this, to walk humbly with God. And one way we do that is to walk humbly with our spouse.
Amen. That's really good. So something I want to touch on before we end our conversation is you bring up children in the book. You actually mentioned at the beginning of our episode, not making them the center of our marriages. Why don't we dig into that a little bit? Because it plays a big role in making marriage easier, because if we do this wrong, we make our marriage harder.
Yes. Yeah, it's so true. And I will tell you, so one of you, it might be the wife, it might be the husband. Usually it's the wife, that we as moms, we love to do things for our kids. We love
you're the nurturers.
Cater.
It's natural.
Exactly. Like we want to like pick them up. We want to make them things. We want to buy them things. We want to do all this stuff. So I think it is, first of all, with the questions, like asking ourselves, if like, let's say you're trying to make a decision, should we do soccer this year? Right. So then we think, okay, well, that would be good for our child. Let's do it. But is it good for our marriage? Is it good for the whole family? So it just has to enter the conversation. It cannot just be like, we have to do this because it's good for the kids. It also has to be also asked, how is this going to impact us as husband and wife? How is this going to impact the energy levels of everyone in the house? How is this going to impact the family dinner time? And so maybe we can sustain it for a season, but maybe all year long we can't. So maybe we decide we'll just do soccer with the school, but we're not going to do soccer and club, because then that's going to be all year long and we can't handle that. Mm-hmm. So it is realizing, wait a minute. And here's the thing, because we feel terrible, right? We want to do everything for our kids. But if we bend over backwards and we take them to all these activities and we do all these things, but we don't have a warm relationship with our spouse, right? Mm-hmm. So they're seeing like, oh, mom and dad are not that happy together. Like, I'm sure they can't say it then, probably as kids, but I'm sure when they're older, they'd say, man, we wish you didn't take us all over town. And we wish you guys would have just stayed happily married. Like, we would have liked that a lot more. So really having that perspective of, you are my priority relationship, spouse of mine. And that's hard, because I'll give that lip service. But if my husband, and I'm guilty of this, like if my husband asks me, hey, can you do me a favor? And it takes, you know, half an hour of my day or something, I'm kind of huffing and puffing about that. But if my kid needs me to go buy him an outfit for like their play, like I'll go do that. And
yeah, two hours of your day.
Yeah, 2 hours of my day. And I'll be like skipping through the aisles thinking that's the greatest thing ever, right? So we do have to have a shift of thinking like, oh, okay, you're important too, husband of mine, wife of mine.
This plays out sometimes. I mean, in my marriage, we co-sleep. So we have our little baby and she's with us, and we're already starting to transition to a crib.
Yeah.
But early on with our, you know, older kids, when they were first born, it can easily, if you don't think about your spouse, if you're letting your children in bed and like they're taking that space and you don't have a time frame and you don't have a discussion about it and you don't work on, you know, making that space yours again, that could cause rifts, that can cause dissension and struggle. There's another thing with our bedroom. I always tell my kids, I'm like, that bedroom's special. It's my place. Me and mommy, that's our home. Yes. That's our place. You don't get just free access to it. You have to ask us, you have to knock, you have to, you know, if you need to be in our room, you have to get permission, and it's not just free for all. You know, there's other rooms in the house you have free access
totally.
To. Not that one.
It's
that's
a good
our
boundary.
Special space.
Yeah.
You know, and like making our kids see that our relationship is special and above. Like, hey, this is something that we protect and you guys get to be a part of that.
I love that, because they grow up and then they're like, oh, mommy and daddy have a special place. Right. Yeah. And it's good. That's a good framework to have.
I love that. And that it's something that if we don't take care of it and make it a priority right away. This is something that has been a major issue in a lot of marriages over the last, you know, handful of decades, of the whole you know, children are leaving, empty nest syndrome, and then parents are getting divorced years after children leave.
Yeah.
And the children are like, what happened? I thought you guys were happy. I'm like, well, actually, we haven't been happy our whole marriage. And you're like, what? You know, just, faking it the whole time. And I wouldn't say faking it. I think they often, they look back and they think like, oh, we were just holding on for you guys. But in reality, it's other things. But we don't want to be that. We want to be parents that we biblically prioritize the oneness with our spouse so that our children see a healthy model, because we all didn't see it. You know, not the royal we. Like, there's a lot of us that didn't have that good model. Mm-hmm. And we want our kids to have more than we had. We want them to have more opportunity, more of understanding. And not that they're going to have all of a sudden perfect marriages, but probably a better likelihood of having a good marriage than, you know, maybe we would have had.
I have a little something about this. We didn't do this much, but you know how Valentine's Day is a lover's holiday. It is for a man and a woman who are in love. But when you have children, Valentine's Day shifts to the kids, right? So you give all the Valentines and all the candy to the kids.
That's so true.
Right? But Valentine's is a lover's holiday. So we had made jokes about this because, you know, and I'm like any other mom, I get the Valentine's Day treats for my kids, and you send in the little things to the classroom and all that. And then to your spouse, you're like, okay, let's have dinner and something, you know. So, but it's just like the spouse is almost equal, if not under, the kids' experience. So one year we did do it where the kids, they were kind of like upper elementary age, where they served us dinner on Valentine's Day. And it was super cute. We had like do a little chalkboard of the menu. It was a very simple menu. I mean, I think I cooked and they served it. It was just pasta. You know, it was very simple, but they made a little menu, and one of them came out in a little apron and was the hostess and sat us, and we did a little candlelight, and they came out and they brought us the food. It was super cute. So that's a shout out to just like have these rhythms in your home that are visual to your kids to show them like, oh, you know what, this whole husband wife thing, it is special. And then it forces you to even recognize that. And the other thing we've done is like a regular getaway, just 24 hours. So 24 hours and you, the kids go to grandma and grandpa's and you spend 24 hours, just the two of you. If you have someone local that you can, you know, use that it's trusted for that, then that's perfect. Cause then you just are local and you just get away for 24 hours. If this means you really have to travel to someone, to grandma and grandpa, it is worth it. Like, as long as you're with grandma and grandpa, ask them, watch the kids for a day, just you guys, because that'll give them an opportunity to bond. And then you two take a night and go to the hotel. It really is important. Just get away as a rhythm once a year for 24 hours. And that'll
minimum
do wonders.
24 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. For the first time in 11 years, there was a couple times that my wife and I went away, but we always had one of our children with us. Yeah. It was for work also. Yeah. It wasn't just for us,
right.
But for the first time for my 40th birthday, Jennifer's like, what do you want? I was like, I just want me and you to go to Hawaii.
Yeah.
And so we went for a few days.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
It was awesome. But like, 24 hours in, we're like, we miss the kids.
Totally, right?
We wish they were here.
No, it is. No, it's true, because you experience the things. You're like, oh, I wish they could have seen that. Yeah, no,
yeah.
I get it.
Well, I realize how many things are more fun with kids.
Yeah,
like sitting on the beach is cool.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
But sitting there and the kids having a blast and throwing sand and playing in the water and building sandcastles, that's what makes it fun.
Yeah, that's so funny. That's awesome.
But I told Jennifer, I was like, every year, I was like, we don't have to go to Hawaii every year, but for sure, I'm going to take you somewhere for at least a night, just me and you, to go hang out and have us time.
Yeah.
Because it was so refreshing. It was so necessary. And then it also made us miss the kids and get excited to come back. And so
it is. It has all those benefits. It's like, okay, this is how we were before kids. And it gets you used to being just the two of you. And then you're right. It's like, yay, I'm back home with the kids. And then that's a good feeling.
Yeah, I love it. But Jennifer and I are realizing we're so close that this next 10 years, we're going to have kids moving out, getting married, having their own children. And I was just realizing, like, I can't wait to have grandkids. Yeah. And then Jennifer and I are already talking about, like, we're going to, like, travel around and see them and, like, make our whole career go and hang out with our kids' kids.
All the grandkids, right.
Yeah. And I'm getting excited about that. I'm trying to set it up now. I hope I don't mess it up. I'm trying to set it up now so that we have good relationships with all of our kids.
Totally.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I'm human. So not as an excuse, but
I love that though.
Yeah. We tell the kids all the time, we're like, we can't wait for you guys to have kids. They're like, how many kids are we going to have? I'm like, I don't know, but I'm excited for you to have kids because I want to go hang out with your kids. Yeah. So it's a cool thing. So what's one piece of advice, as we come to a close, that you can give to couples feeling overwhelmed maybe? Mm-hmm. Because it's fun to talk about. Like you said, you look in hindsight and you can laugh about things that were not funny at the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there's a lot of marriages. I remember what it felt like for us. Like mm-hmm. you're in the midst of struggle. You're in the midst of weight and heaviness and bitterness and anger. And it's just not what you wanted.
Yeah.
What's something you can encourage those couples with that are listening that might be there?
Yeah. Two thoughts come to mind. Making marriage easier. You know how, like, if you want to go to the gym, but it's like, you bought the membership and now you got to get in the car. It's like, oh, you forget about it. Mm-hmm. But if you have an appointment, if it's like, I'm going to that specific class and then my friend is going to meet me there. And if I don't show up, I have to pay them $10 and I put my shoes by the bed so that I pick out my outfit if I'm a girl and I just wake up and I put that stuff up and I go. That made it easier. So how can we do that in marriage? So try to make it as specific as possible, not just like, I'll try to be nicer.
Yeah, but just mean?
Be like, okay, when they come home, I will give him or her a hug. See, so it's very specific, right?
Yeah.
So try to do something easy that you can repeat and make it specific and just do that. Like, just be like, okay, I've listened to this podcast and when my spouse comes home, I'm going to hug them. And that's all I'm going to do for like 2 weeks, you know? So don't make it so complicated that it's like, oh my goodness, I cannot do this. Like, it's way too many things at once to try to do, you know, I'm going to book this and I'm going to take out the dragon and I'm going to do this. Like, just concentrate on a little thing and do it and start feeling that win and that momentum of, hey, we feel a little closer because we're doing that little daily hug thing, and then move to the, hey, let's try date night and let's do that once a month. Mm. Okay, we're doing the date night once a month. Now let's move on to the once a year 24-hour thing. So just keep that momentum going and pray. Just ask, Lord, humble my heart. Just make me willing to learn. Make me willing. Help me to be a servant like you're a servant. Change me. Change my heart, God. And let the Holy Spirit, you know, do that heavy work. Yeah. And as you're moving, he's going to empower that. Just like fill that sail and make it go so much further.
You might have just given a magic bullet, by the way. Mm. This hug thing. Mm. I don't know how many times that if I come home and when my kids do it, when they run up to give me a hug, or when my wife goes out of her way to say, hey, and hugs me. And like, it makes me feel so big as a man. And I don't think I'm unique. I think every husband would love that.
Yeah.
Just someone that's happy to see them when they come home. And shows it. That would be such a huge thing, I think, for many marriages.
Isn't that beautiful? And it's not hard. Like, that is not hard. And
it could feels be hard like
a
sometimes.
New, yeah. But it could be a new habit that now it becomes not hard because it feels so natural.
It would be an amazing thing. I also want to add the Thanksgiving portion of this. It's a simple thing, even though it feels hard, of just focusing, like, even to yourself or in a journal, what are you thankful for? Like, because it'd be like, I'm not thankful for my husband. Like, well, no, there's, or my wife, there is stuff you're thankful
something.
For.
Yeah.
Like that they support you, that they are there, that they did that specific thing the other day for the kids, that there's something, many things probably. We were talking to the kids about Thanksgiving the other day. And I was saying you probably, if you were to start doing it, and you would probably never stop finding things to be thankful for.
Yeah.
If you just tried to articulate it. And it'd actually be very difficult to stop being thankful if you started, which would be a big mental transformation of like going from I'm not thankful right now, I'm lonely, I'm sad, I'm angry, to I'm going to be thankful. And the Holy Spirit uses that, and he draws us to the Father in that Thanksgiving. It's a part of our worship to him. Mm-hmm. And the Bible tells us that when we pray to him and give thanksgiving to him, that his peace that surpasses all understanding will guard our hearts and our minds in Christ Jesus.
Yeah.
And so thanksgiving. So I love your practical, like, take one specific thing and try that and do that. And then the Thanksgiving, I think, would be a massive game changer of changing our perspective on our current circumstances. Amen. Arlene, thank you so much. What's your book called again?
It is called Making Marriage Easier. And you can go to makingmarriageeasier.com and check it out. There's like freebies there and discussion questions that you can do in a group and all sorts of things to go with the date night ideas. So makingmarriageeasier.com.
And that I will put those links in our show notes so that everyone can get them. Arlene, you're awesome and encouraging. And I just pray that lots of people get your book. And I pray that marriages are just blessed by it.
Thank you. And I pray that your listeners will chip in and get you guys a new mattress. Just kidding.
I'm thankful for our mattress.
There you go.
I'm thankful for our mattress.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, I hope to have you again soon. And you have an awesome day. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Eric.